It's good for us when we hear the gospel and we feel very personally challenged by it. That means that we're taking the gospel seriously. And I think today's gospel is extremely challenging, even radical. Jesus says, "Whoever loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And whoever loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me." A couple weeks ago in my homily, I was commenting on how I was visiting my youngest brother and was observing him hold his newborn baby daughter. So I was watching this big masculine guy hold this little baby girl, and I could see his heart melting as he was looking at her. Parenting brings out even a sort of animal instinct in us, a desire to protect our child at all cost, a wild kind of love. If their life were in danger, without thinking, we would give our life for theirs. Yet, Jesus says this in today's gospel, "Whoever loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me." Jesus demands the first place, the highest place in our life, but also in our love. So if we feel challenged or confused or offended by what Jesus is telling us today, it probably means that we're taking the gospel seriously, that we get the implications of what he's saying, that what Jesus is telling us is very demanding and might run counter to what our own instincts would be or our own even feeling of what is right and what's wrong. Is it even possible to live this? Should we want to live this way, loving Jesus more than even our closest family members? Would it make us happy if we lived this way? So the saints certainly lived this, and their lives can be really helpful for us in learning how to follow God and how to love God, especially the martyrs in light of today's gospel. Jesus says, "Whoever finds his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake finds it." Whoever loses his life for my sake finds it. The martyrs chose God and their love for God over their love for their home, their possessions, their freedom, but also they chose God over their desire to remain with their family. They have the opportunity to live and reject their faith or to keep their faith and to die, giving up everything. So a saint that comes to mind immediately in this regard is the English saint Thomas More. The church celebrated his memorial about 10 days ago on June 22nd. Thomas More his life spanned the end of the 1400s and the beginning of the 1500s, so almost 500 years ago, or over 500 years ago. Thomas is very happily married with four children. He was a brilliant lawyer. He had a very high position in the government of King Henry VIII. And King Henry trusted Thomas so much that he made him Lord Chancellor over all of England. So basically giving him second place in the kingdom with a lot of authority. But a problem arose when King Henry wanted an annulment from his marriage to Catherine of Aragon. He wanted to marry Anne Boleyn. But the Pope refused to grant the annulment. So, furious, King Henry took matters into his own hands and declared himself to be head of the church in England. And he demanded that all English subjects recognize him and not the Holy Father in Rome as the head of the church. So following his conscience, Thomas More refused to do this and was imprisoned in the Tower of London. So while he was sitting in the prison, not knowing whether he was going to live or die, he wrote letters, some of them to his family. There's a particularly beautiful letter he wrote to his daughter Margaret, whom he affectionately called Meg. She would have been about 30 at the time, 30 years old. He tells her, "My good daughter, do not let your mind be troubled over anything that shall happen to me in this world. Nothing can come but what God wills. And I am very sure that whatever that be, however bad it may seem, it shall indeed be the best." And God's will did happen in this regard. On July 1st, 1535, he was sentenced to death, and 5 days later, he was beheaded. He was 57 years old. He could have renounced what he believed was true. He could have signed the oath of succession, but instead he put his love for Christ and Christ's teaching first, even though this meant that he had to say goodbye to his family. But he says something really important to Meg. He says, "Whatever God wills, however bad it may seem, it shall indeed be the best." Whatever God wills, however bad it may seem, shall indeed be the best. These are words that we could pray with for a long time. The things that God wills in my life are the best for me. The good, even the bad, even the things that seem very bad, it's the best for me because God's willed it so. But this wasn't just true for Thomas himself, what was best for him, but it's also true for his family too. So what was God's will for Thomas More, which was his imprisonment and his death, was also the best for his family as well. Even though it seemed to be bad, it was indeed the best. When we choose Christ and put him first, not only do we choose what's best for us, but we choose what's best also for our loved ones, however bad it may seem. But sometimes, and I think we get this sense as we listen to Thomas More's story, it can seem that our loves are in competition. It might seem like our love for Christ is in competition with our love for our family. I think families experience this. You who are families experience this all the time. We live in a culture that doesn't value our obligations that we owe to God. And so there's so much going on in our life. It seems like if we want our kids to fit in with the world and be able to do what their friends want to, we have to make compromises when it comes to following our faith and putting Jesus first. An obvious example of this is just the pressure to allow our kids not to come to Sunday Mass with us because they're working or they have volleyball or we skip Sunday Mass because these opportunities we feel like are maybe more important. But we have to remember, and it's understandable that we would succumb to the pressures that we feel from the world, but we have to look at the gospel. Jesus says we have to put him first. We have to. Even when it seems like putting him first means that we have to make our family unhappy or even deprive our family of something that they want or that seems good for them. So why is it that these words of Jesus can create a sense of discomfort in us? I think sometimes we forget how authentic love works. When we love authentically, our capacity for love increases. So this is so true in marriage and in family life. I've been thinking about the elderly mothers whose funerals I've had during my priesthood, some of these mothers having 10, 12 or more kids, And I, even if I didn't know them, I got to know them by planning the funeral with their children, their many children. Sometimes there'll be like 12 children who are in the funeral planning meeting, all of course having their own opinions and ideas about what the funeral should be like. But one thing that strikes me so often when I'm working with a large family like this who are celebrating the funeral of their parent is how loved each one of them felt, even though there were 12 of them. That so often I get the sense that each one really felt known and loved by their mother. And it seemed that even with each additional child, their mother's ability and capacity to love didn't dry up because there were so many of them, but it only increased. And this shows us something really important about love, that authentic love only generates more love and not less. So when we love authentically, we can love more. We can welcome more people into our heart and not fewer, because love doesn't dry up. It only keeps going, keeps expanding. So this is also true and helps us to understand the husband-wife relationship in the family too. One of the things I tell couples when they're preparing for marriage is that they have to put their relationship first, even after they start having kids. And they can't think, and this is so common for us, they can't think that once they start having kids, the most important relationship in their life is with their kids and not with their spouse. It's with their spouse. That's the most important relationship for a married couple. We, and again, some couples are like, oh, I can't, that doesn't make any sense to me, or that seems wrong to me. Well, it only seems wrong if our love is limited, if our love will dry up. But because authentic love only expands, this is the only way that marriage works, actually, because the husband and wife, the man and the woman, love each other so much, it generates within them the capacity to love their children well. So if parents want to love their children the best that they can, they have to give their love to one another. That relationship has to be the strongest relationship and the focus. And if it is, they'll be able to provide the foundation of love for the rest of their family. So, all of this, I think, helps us to understand how Jesus can say something as radical as this: whoever loves father or mother, whoever loves their parents more than me is not worthy of me, whoever loves their children more than me is not worthy of me. Because if we love Jesus the most, then we'll have the capacity of heart to love our spouse as we need to. And we'll have the capacity to love our children as we need to, because of how generative Christ's love is within us. Jesus, the Father, Son, the Holy Spirit, they're the ones who made marriage and family and give them to us as a gift. Of course, they're going to equip us with all of the love that we need to keep this great responsibility that's been given to us in our children, in our spouse, in our family, in our brothers and sisters. So of course Jesus is not saying that we should love our children less than we do or love our spouse more than we do. He's saying that you can only love them adequately if you love him first. Love him first, and then we'll have the grace that we need to love others as we ought to, with full and generous hearts continuously expanding, like a mother who has 12 children and loves and knows each of them as well as she possibly can because of the expansive nature of authentic love. So let's ask the Lord today to purify our loves, that we would never put anything or anyone above God, as tempting as that might be. Let's ask him to give us the grace of trust, that if we love him first, we're going to best love our spouse, our children, our parents, our neighbor. That's the way to true love, by living this love relationship with God and putting him first.